Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 270. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. We've got a great guest joining us, a great topic as well, talking pitchers for Dynasty. And I'm really excited for this conversation and to really break down some arms that I think obviously going to have a big impact on Dynasty Leagues, maybe some guys that, you know, you're not as in on that you should be, and maybe some guys that you're too high on that you maybe should temper expectations. I think it's going to be a really good episode with a really great guest that knows pitching well.
Absolutely. As soon as we lock this guest in, this is one I've been very excited for. Always fun talking pitching with this guy who's one of the best pitching minds in the world. And there's no doubt about that. And someone that's always seems to change my mind a little bit on some prospects, whether for pitchers, whether it's good or bad. He is obviously the founder, the guy over there at Pitcher List. Everyone knows him. Mr. Nick Pollock joins us today. Nick, thanks so much for taking some time to talk your favorite subject here with pitching. How are you doing?
It is wonderful to be here. That's too much of an intro. And yeah, it's just great to see you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us.
Yeah.
All right, let's hop right into it now. We got so many names to talk about. This could go on for 3 hours, but we'll try to keep it right around the hour mark here. So we'll start out with Chris and I's personal top 10 dynasty ranks, and then we'll pick the brain of Nick here to see what he thinks about certain players moving forward. Chris, who are your top 10 dynasty pitchers right now?
I'm starting out with none other than Spencer Strider, followed by Gerrit Cole, Corbin Burns, Zach Gallen, and Luis Castillo, 5 spot, and then 6 through 10 being Yuri Perez, George Kirby, Zach Wheeler, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Grayson Rodriguez. How about you?
Yeah, you really got to slow down to say that name or you'll trip over yourself. But mine go, I got Spencer Strider at 1, Gerrit Cole 2, Corbin Burns 3, so we had the same 1, 2, 3. Then I go Yuri Perez 4, Grayson Rodriguez 5, Zach Gallen 6, George Kirby 7, Luis Castillo 8, Kevin Gausman 9, and Zach Wheeler in the 10 spot there. A couple of old reliables there rounding out my top 10. Let's start with a guy that we both have ranked number 7, and a new addition to the top 10 dynasty ranks and for redraft ADP as well, because ADP is right around this range as well. That's Mr. George Kirby. A little bit different than a lot of the guys in this range of rankings. Most of the guys you're looking at here will have these massive strikeout rates, have the sexy profile. And Kirby obviously is a very nasty pitcher, but not really the big K rate guy, but super low walk rate. So again, a bit different. But Nick, Kirby's being valued as an ace everywhere, redraft, dynasty, whatever. Are you comfortable with Kirby as an ace? Do you think the stuff is there long term for him to be one of those aces year in, year out for years to come?
Okay, before I even go into that, I feel, just so I have an understanding with both of you, because making dynasty rankings is not an easy thing. It's actually like, I feel so lucky that I don't do it because it's just too impossible to do. You're talking about projecting skills that they don't even know that they're going to learn. They don't know what conversations they're going to have. And there's one person that suggests, hey, cool, maybe actually grip your slider like this. And all of a sudden now he's an ace. And it's like, oh, I'm supposed to know this.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just very briefly, I'm sure it's really helpful for everybody. And because I imagine I have a different take than you guys. Chris, we'll start with you. Just what is your, when you're going after a starting pitcher in Dynasty, say for, hey, this year versus next year, like what are the main skill sets that you want? And then what is the general window that you look for?
Yeah, so I think it always varies based on the contention stats of the team. But let's say straight startup, like I'm not looking anywhere past 3 years. Mm-hmm. 3 year window seems to be the sweet spot. A lot of dynasty leagues fold pretty quick, sadly.
Sure. Yeah.
You play that risk, and I see a lot of people drafting all prospects, and then they don't even see those guys come to fruition
right. Because
the league folds. So I think in a general sense, I'm looking at a 3 year window. Most time I'm drafting to win now. And then it's just a build strategy, like just looking at like how I'm building out a rotation. Typically, like I want to have an ace. I don't want to wait too long in a dynasty draft to get a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different than obviously a redraft league. You think like an NFBC format, like the pitchers go really early. You have to jump on them. But you know, in a general sense, like I want one of the top guys if I can, depending on where they're going. And then just build around like higher floor, like innings guys. That also, I think, typically we see the older guys underrated in Dynasty. So you can get some good values there, too.
Absolutely.
And so it's a little mix of that. Because like, once guys are over like 30, people just write them off, which is wild. Mm-hmm. But yeah. With pitchers, obviously, like we see them pitch deeper in their careers and pitch at high levels. So you can get great values on those older type aces in a Dynasty because people just don't want to touch them. If I'm playing to win, I'm going to draft them all day long.
Yeah. And just the last question I had there was, the last one was, what skills are you looking at when it comes to young guys that you think, okay, cool, that is going to be stickier for their career as opposed to others that just say, maybe this is not really going to be a ace down the road?
Yeah, so I think that's something that I think pitchers are a little easier to evaluate, like how they will potentially fare at the major league level versus a hitter.
Don't know. It's really hard, guys. No one else can do it except us. No,
you just see the stuff. So like, I think you're seeing that more with teams now too. Teams see these guys have the stuff and they're just going to push them. The Braves pushed AJ Smith-Shawver pretty aggressively.
Yeah.
Like he was 20 years old. He started in high A and they were literally like, okay, he's got the stuff. Like I call it his only AAA start before he got called up. And like Alex Anthopoulos is there watching. So I just chatted with him for a few and he holds everything to his chest, but he's like, we believe this guy is as good as anybody we've got in Gwinnett and maybe in Atlanta. So they're just going to push them because they know the stuff is there. Yeah, I'm looking for obviously the fastball. I think that's the biggest deterrent for me is like when guys have like 90 mile an hour fastballs, like we don't typically see a ton of growth unless they're a lot younger. But when you have these prospects that are having these low 90s, 90, 91, it's a little bit concerning to me. And those don't project as well. Like guys that have big fastballs and command, like obviously that plays well if they can command the fastball, especially if it's a four seamer up. Some guys are going to play better sinkers down, but if they've got the riding fastball, they've got a secondary that plays off of it. They show decent command at lower levels, especially like that's going to play as you move up. And it's certainly a trait that you have to have. I think just watching the mound presence, like you see guys that are just bulldogs and like, okay, like this guy has the presence to sure. Succeed and just beat anybody. And like, that's something that's hard to quantify without really watching them.
Can you call them a Santa because they have the presence? So I think that's pretty good. I absolutely am there for that. And Eric, I just killed an off of that. So for Chris was saying about the skills, we'll start there. And then, of course, back to the beginning of that one about like your window and just how you evaluate them.
Yeah. So the skills I look at, it's there's a wide range, but I think I can simplify it the best by saying their ability to miss bats, their ability to limit walks, and their ability to get ground balls. And that's not always a perfect method. We've seen guys have a little bit of a higher walk rate, still succeed, and give up more fly balls and still succeed. But generally, if I see a pitcher that can do those three things, if you want to simplify it, look at their K minus BB rate, look at the ground ball rate. If those are both pretty good, that's at least a good base to work off of. Obviously, there's other variables after that, but those are the two things I look at the most. And obviously, you got to watch some video, look at the stuff. And yeah, sometimes you can see even guys in the low minors, like, all right, this guy has the stuff. Obviously, we'll see how he develops. Everything can change in the blink of an eye, like you mentioned. Sometimes they add a pitch, or they lose their command of a certain pitch, and everything can change very quickly. But those are really the skills I look for with pitching prospects. And I, in terms of the window, obviously everyone wants to win year one, but I feel like, let's say you have a 15 team startup, I'd be willing to say an average of 12 of those teams are trying to do the same thing you are. So sometimes it can be hard when everybody's going off the same strategy. So sometimes I do look towards year two, year three. That's why you'll see some of these top pitching prospects from me are ranked a little bit higher than they will be for Chris. We'll get to that later in the show. But you'll see all these guys that I do have ranked in my top 50 that haven't debuted yet are all guys that should debut this year. So it's not like they're in low A, not debuting until 25, 26, et cetera. These are all guys that can make at least some impact later in this year. The Jobs, the Hortons, those types. And then potentially be that impact arm starting next year. So that year two, that's the one I usually gravitate towards the most. As I feel like, again, sometimes when I start going out for a win now approach, everyone else is, I have to flip my strategy because some of the values aren't there that I was hoping would be there. But yeah, that year two, three window, I try to hit hard. And while not sacrificing year one, like for instance, in the Highlander Dynasty, I was mid-pack. That's, Chris, is that 20 teams, right? Yeah, 20 teams. I think I was like ninth year one, and then I was leading, you know, first, second, third a lot of the season. My team did down the stretch falter a little bit. I think I finished fifth, but that's the strategy that I implored there, and it worked very well. So if you do it right, I think it can be a good strategy, but obviously win now. Like Chris said, you never know when these leagues are going to fold. Some of them fold after year two, three. I've seen it before. It's happened to me before, unfortunately, so I never go win later. Unless you're getting those prospects to flip, like Ian Kahn does that. He does it very well.
He does that very well.
And Ian Kahn is one of the best dynasty players out there without a question. And he does that strategy and does it very well. So that can work as well. But yeah, that's generally how I approach it.
Awesome. And here I am. I just slipped your podcast on you, right? I became the host. Aha! It's my show now.
Little switch up here this episode.
No. What I was telling Eric and Chris before the show is this is the first year I really started to dive into prospect pitchers. I've always said in the past, oh yeah, Nick, you really should do this because being aware as they come up is a big advantage, but I just never really had the data to do it. And now that StatCast has AAA has StatCast TrackMan in every stadium, I can actually get good data that I can believe in while also access to a lot more video just by going to Twitter media and just seeing stuff. Chris, I've quoted your tweets and also yours, Eric, inside of the rotation articles I've written because you guys have video that is actually from behind them and I can understand what's going on. And that's great. And it's incredibly helpful. My philosophies are a little bit different, maybe a little bit more on your side, Chris, about fastball being just the number one thing. It's more nuanced in the sense of, okay, it's got to be four-seamer. If it's sinker, it better be elite command with or excellent arm side and vertical. Or then if it's at least arm side, then he better have spots inside to right-handers. And really, when it comes to pitching, there's so many ways of breaking up, like, are they going to be successful or not? It can be as simple as, do they have a weapon against righties and do they have a weapon against lefties?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I see a sinker slider guy or a sinker changeup guy. I'm like, that's cool, but is that enough? I don't know. Maybe the sinker is enough inside of righties and changeup good enough against lefties, but like a sinker slider, if it's a sweeper, sweepers are worse against opposite handedness. So they don't have a thing against opposite handedness then, because sinkers are really bad against opposite handedness. You cannot be Aaron Nola or Kyle Hendricks guys. Okay, even Kyle Hendricks' sinker is terrible now against lefties. So it's okay. If I'm going to take a chance on a prospect, they need to have an overpowering four seamer. They just have to, or they have two specific secondaries that are dope. They have a major slider and a major changeup, and they have 20% swinging strike rates on both of those. And that's awesome. And I can feel really confident in that. And then it's just about navigating those that fastball or that sinker.
So let me ask you real quick. Yeah, we're on the subject ahead here. So I think a perfect example of this is Drew Thorpe.
So
you're not in. Obviously
no. The other thing is that if they're changeup focused, best example, Gavin Stone.
Yeah.
Okay. Gavin Stone was all about the changeup. But here's the thing. If you're a righty and you're focused on changeups, that's only good against lefties. It's so rare to find a guy like Michael Wacha that doesn't care and just throws one of the best changeups in the game and it can go against righties. Gavin Stone needed to have a slider that was amazing too. He doesn't really have a great one. It's better, but it's not what it needed to be. And he just didn't come up and do well, nor did his fastball excel, right? It was really just rooted in that changeup. Drew Thorpe is a little bit better than Gavin Stone. I think there is more to him, but considering that it's rooted in a changeup, honestly, I think that's why the Yankees were willing to give him up instead of Thompson and instead of Will Warren. It's Chase Thompson, right? I think I got that right in my head.
Chase Hampton.
Hampton. Oh, God. My God. So close. So close, guys. All right. But watching both of those guys, I like both of them a lot. And they both have good fastball. They both have secondary pitches that work. This feels more put together and ready to take that leap, right? So for me, that's a huge thing when it comes to if they haven't debuted yet. And then for guys that do, or that's like their young year, I'm like, cool, I'm trying to project them out. It really, again, you got to be able to dominate with that heater if I'm going to rank you highly. If you are getting hit hard with your fastball early, I'm already, no thank you. If I don't think that any of your secondaries can be thrown for strikes, I'm not going to go after you saying the floor right now is not worth it. You know, that I think that right now we've seen that this is, I call it the shag rug the first year. It's a young man's floor. And it's really bad, like it. Right? That's why I say to all rookies, for most rookies, if I feel they're volatile, like they have the shag rug. But there are certain guys that are just so electric and their stuff is so good that's like, okay, they probably can get past this. Bobby Miller is a perfect example for me. Bobby Miller's floor is phenomenal because it's a slider that's incredible, a curveball that's incredible, two fastballs that move in two planes. And literally the only thing that Bobby Miller really needs to fix, I mean, there's two things. The slider needs to come back just a little bit more over the plate, is his approach. The Dodgers, I don't know what this is. The Dodgers love to throw low fastballs. Of all teams, the Dodgers. Walker Buehler's four-seamer actually has elite fastball shape, but he throws it low. Ryan Pepiot had actually above-average fastball shape, and I thought it wasn't a good fastball because the results weren't very good, and he's a change-of-focus guy. But the thing is, the fastball's actually good. He was just throwing it low.
Yep.
And now he's going to the Rays. Oh, ha-ha. I'm so in on that. That's I'm really excited about that because they're totally going to say get that four seamer upstairs. And Bobby Miller's fastballs should just destroy upstairs. Absolutely kill it there. And he hasn't yet. And that's an easy adjustment to me. That's something I'm like, cool. I'm very much in on that. I think both of you guys had Grayson Rodriguez in your top 10, right?
Yep.
Yep.
His four seamer was crushed. Like 48% ICR. And if you don't know ICR, that's ideal contact rate. It says on all balls in play, it's not just hard hit. It's the batted ball events that are over a 60% chance of a hit. So it's like the flares and burners and solid contact as well. And then the other ones are all like sub 15% chance. So it's like two clear buckets. And so we just take the bucket of like high hit chance ICR, ideal contact rate. Yeah, 48% is really bad. Like on a four seamer, you want 40% at highest and like really lower. Like the elite fastballs are like 36%, unless it's Striders, but he misses so many times with it, then fine. He doesn't miss enough bats either with it. And I'm like, what the heck? And this is even including the time when he came back. Now, I'm not even talking about like April and May. I'm talking from like when he came back in July and the rest of the year. And that's terrifying to me because two things. One, he throws it like 50% of the time plus. And two, the quote of this offseason is like, yeah, it's all about the four-seamer. And I'm like, but it has good VAA, just doesn't have the IVB. And I'm a little worried about it, but I also understand he should get better over time. He throws it hard enough. And the slider and change are both really good. And I feel like he gets more comfortable with those things. That's really nice. I just get my worries of he still needs to figure things out. He's not there yet. And this, he can't just like replicate what he did in that second half because he will not have the same results. And it's for me to say like, oh, cool, that's like my guy dynasty. Let's go with that. I don't know. There are a lot of guys that I think the next 3 years are much safer and more productive that I'd be concerned about it. But at the same time, like how much weight am I putting into a half a year of a sample? Right. Like this is why you guys go and see these things and you're like, no, Nick, like that's not the right thing. So it's a fun conversation about like, what am I going to be leaning on inside of a dynasty? What you guys are doing, you guys playing these leagues more than I do. So probably listen to y'all, but I just wanted to set that understanding for where each of us are coming from. And yeah, that top 10, I feel like you guys were missing. Yeah. Neither of you guys said Bobby Miller. What's wrong with Bobby Miller? What do you got?
I did initially. I actually, when I put my rankings on here initially, I had him 9, and that's 100% the truth.
What happened?
I don't know. I love Bobby Miller. I know I've seen him live.
You saw 24% carry. It's not going to get better.
No, I absolutely think it's going to get better. The stuff is elite. It's top 10 stuff in all of baseball. I think you look at entire arsenals.
Doesn't walk, guys.
Yeah,
and it can improve.
Higher floor. I moved him down. Just a, you know, a little foreshadowing here. I moved him down to 15. So he's in that mass. This is a massive
50. Block for me. I'm just kidding.
No, 15.
Wow, you moved him 6 spots, not like 2.
But it's a massive glob, though. I'm still playing this run. For me, it's all right. It's Strider, Cole, Burns. I think those are set in stone top 3.
Burns is weird because Burns lost command of his curve and was getting fewer strikes with stuff. And then I did a whole thing on it. It's so funny. I get these 30 minutes where I know everything about a guy. And then I'm like, wait, 2 days later, I'm like, what did I write about that guy? What was that thing? I don't know. It's so much harder in the offseason where you're not writing all the time about them, getting constantly reminded. But yeah, so Burns, I like that you guys are both. Yeah, Burns is going to be fine, I think. Chris, you had Burns high, right?
Yes, Adam 3 as well. So
yeah, okay. All right,
I'm banking on the bounce back and him being.
And y'all hate Wheeler for some reason?
I've got Wheeler 8. It's just the age aspect.
I got him 10. Yeah. It is, obviously. But 33. Originally, like him and Gausman were a couple spots lower than the opposite way. I was like, all right, that feels too low for them. Because even
get
though they
Gausman
are
out of here, get him out of the top 10. Bobby Miller easily above Gausman.
Even though they are 33, I was like, we've seen pitchers obviously dominate deeper into the 30s. And I think these are two guys that obviously I don't see them slowing down anytime soon. Hmm. I'm still going to play with it. You know, obviously, Bobby Miller's 8-9 years younger than these two. So I might move him back ahead of these before I post my rankings in a couple of weeks overall. But it's a massive glob. You got 1 through 3, like I mentioned, and then really 4 through 15 or so. Like, I think it starts falling off for me like 16, 17 range.
So who's 11, 12, 13, 14? This is what this podcast is going to be, everyone. They have a whole outline. It's not. No.
We're going off below. So my 11 through 15 are Glasnow, Skubal, Yamamoto, Lopez, and Bobby Miller.
You can't do that. You can't do that.
Do what?
You can't put Glasnow in 11.
I know. I feel weird about it.
He has 500 total innings in his career.
I know. I feel weird about it.
Bobby Miller is going to have more innings in the next 3 years than Glasnow has in his entire career thus far.
Probably.
So I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
He did have his career high this past year. I'm actually hoping that the potential six man that they signed Paxton will help Glasnow maybe stay healthy for a full year. Sure. But I don't know. Yeah, he is probably my toughest pitcher to rank because he's a guy I used to be very much against him, even though the stuff was there. But then obviously the walk rate used to be higher. He dropped that, added the slider, which was a very good slider.
Glasnow's slider is just like,
I know.
So
that was good. Another thing I was used to harp on him being a 2-pitch guy. Now he's a 3-pitch guy.
So good.
But now like the last red flag he needs to fix and that he fully hasn't yet is obviously the durability and getting the volumes. Part of me like, all right, he could be a top 5 arm. We've seen him be a top 5 arm. But then the floor is insanely low and much lower than any other pitcher in this range.
And that's why I'm like, you can't put him at 11 because you can't do that risk, right? Like in a redraft, I think you can do it more because if it's like 12 teamers, then the gap between what you replace it with is just like so much better that it's okay. But in a dynasty, I got to think like you lose Glasnow, like what's the next thing is so far away that it just feels it's something that I wouldn't do. That especially is like, cool, I feel confident and you should feel really confident in your ability to find prospects and everything like that. I'm just like, I don't need to rely on Glasnow winning. Just give me a better foundation of money so that I can add on to the stuff I get, right?
Yeah. And Chris, it looks like Chris has, you have him 13, Chris.
Yeah, I'm not.
Chris, come on, you too.
I'm questioning everything now. So I'm curious your thoughts. There's an interview that came out about him talking about having that same injury, like that never got fixed. And I don't know if that's legit or not. Like he said that it was basically like the injury that he had, like just basically lingered for like
reoccurring. Yeah, sure.
I was like, that's interesting. And so I'm not thinking he's going to be like a workhorse type. And so maybe that's just signed to the 13
it's
is too
possible.
High. Yeah,
it's possible. So, there's so many thoughts I have about Glasnow. One, Eric, you mentioned an interesting thing about the Dodgers being six man, and I want to believe you. However, I believe I saw that Walker Buehler might not even start with the team in the beginning of the year.
Right.
Which then makes it really a five man. And honestly, Paxton is like, when he gets injured, then Walker Buehler steps in.
Yeah, well, it's funny when I mentioned that, I just heard rumblings of that. I'm not saying that I don't think they're
going to. No, I thought about six-man too. I think it makes sense with Yamamoto too and Bobby Miller and
exactly. Yamamoto's he's Buehler back when he's ready. Yeah. Glasnow, etc. But when I made that comment on Twitter, it was funny. Someone commented that, saying something like, "Yeah, it'll be down to a five man in May because obviously
it'll be all a three man in May."
Yeah.
I think one of the better tweets I've ever sent is six-man rotations are like the Fellowship of the Ring. It starts off with such high hopes, and it's with two guys trying to last until the very end, right? It just doesn't happen. You don't see six-man rotations unless it's like the Angels. Like, they'll throw anyone in there at that point. They don't really care.
Right.
So the Dodgers are going to try. They certainly had Dodgeritis in the past, and that's gone away the past couple of years, but there likely will be another signing. Like Carrasco is going to just show up there or something.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Or I won't put it past him to re-sign Kershaw. I still think if Kershaw plays...
he's out until August, though.
But I can see them signing him prorated contract in July or something like that for the stretch run.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, something like that. I actually would feel really wrong if Kershaw is in a Dodgers.
I know.
Have him penciled in there.
Yeah, if he's in Texas or wherever else, it was rumored he might be wanting to go. It just feels weird to see him in any other uniform instead of a Dodger uniform.
But that's so interesting. Okay, Glasnow 13. I cut you off on so many things, and this is the good conversations, guys. We just keep moving.
Yeah.
I think I heard Yuri Perez pretty high from you, Eric. Is that right?
Yes, I have him 4.
Talk to me about that one.
Yuri Perez, it's all about the projection with him, like what he was able to do at such a young age. And we saw the elite stuff. Like as soon as he started showing this in the low minors, people were fast-tracking him to be like, this guy's going to be a future ace. And I was in agreement with that. Obviously, is he a perfect finished product? No, absolutely not. And he's still only 21 years old. Actually, he's still 20 right now. He hasn't even turned 21 yet. He won't until April. But just seeing what he was able to do this past year, he had over 20% K-minus walk rate as a rookie with a 3.15 ERA. That is phenomenal. And obviously, he's got the great stuff, four-seamer in the upper 90s. He's got the curve, the slider, the curve, changeup as well. The one thing with him, like I don't like, he's one where he does not get a lot of ground balls. And I'm not really feeling safer with that. I want to see him get more ground balls, but at the same time, when you can miss bats like he can, you can make it work to a degree. But similar to G-Rod, that not quite the same extent, but his fastball was hit around 289 batting average against, 585 slug.
49% ICR last year.
Was it Rodriguez is right in that range too? 40 or something with him. Yes, but obviously the secondaries, like they are with G-Rod too, are very good. Like look at the secondaries, curve and changeup had a batting average against under 100.
Right.
All three secondaries whiff rate above 46%. So
I'm going to give you a very small warning. Be careful using batting average when judging, especially secondaries, because a lot of those are resulting in strikeouts, which are just great. That's how they use it. I like to go more on the like, what is the contact when allows it? And then does it get whiffs and how many strikes does it get? It's like the holy trinity of a pitch to me now.
Yep.
It used to be like the money pitch was O swing and zone rate and a swing strike rate. But now I've taken O swing and zone rate, all that kind of stuff, and just transferred it to the other things. So now the Bitcoin pitch is what I'm calling the modern money pitch. I know I call it something else that's better. Is ICR when it's in play? Does he get strikes with it? And then does he get whiffs with it? So for Yuri, that slider is 24% swing strike rate, 62% strike rate, 33% ICR, which is golden. The curveball, 24% ICR when they actually hit it, and 23% swing strike rate, but he throws it so far out of the zone. So it's only 56% strike rate. And with every secondary, you generally want above a 60% unless it's Senga's Ghost Fork. And that's the only one that I'm like, fine, it's 53% because it's pretty much only in two strike counts. So fine. Yeah. But to the point about the four seamer, Yuri's, I've gotten obsessed with using our PLV apps because they tell me information I never had before and I didn't really understand it. And I was terrified of it, honestly. I think a lot of people are like this and it makes sense. You know what you've been good at that and new things come around and you're like, I don't understand that. So I'm just going to avoid it. And it took me some time, but I'm like, okay, cool. I get this. Good. What is a good four seamer shape? What does this make? How can I actually see if this pitch will be good or not as a four seamer? And it's very simple, right? You guys know this. It's IVB, induced vertical break. That's a huge thing. If it's above 16, it's really good. And 17 and plus, oh my gosh, 15 is, and then underneath that, you're like, oh boy, nope. Then when you get to VAA, you can look at it either as the raw degree, which can be like -5 or so. And then the closer to zero you get, so like -4, the better. Under -5 is good. We use it as just a, like an adjusted VAA, which is about where it's located or where it should be and not based on where it's located. So if you have a 1 or above using our apps, that's a really good VAA that would work upstairs, regardless of where it actually came in. So with Yuri Perez, and there's also extensions part of that. You want a good extension. Like, oh my gosh, if you got like 7 plus, oh boy, if you're under 6, no way. Hunter Green, terrible extension. That's a bad fastball. It's worse than it is. Okay. Anyway, he's got like the best shape. It's so good. It's so flat. He gets IVB. You know where he throws it? Down. So at least I understand that. Grayson Rodriguez gets his up and it gets hit. But Yuri puts it down. So yeah. That's like, oh, this is easy. Yuri throws that upstairs. Pretty much everything upstairs a little bit more. Put the curveball a little bit more up in the zone. And that works. So I am much more in on Yuri than Grayson because, again, that's a simple change. But unlike Bobby Miller, where like the Dodgers, I theoretically can think they'd change it. Are the Marlins going to do that?
I don't understand. My biggest question is, why do these major league orgs look at a fastball like Yuri Perez, like 18 inches of IVB? Like, why is he throwing it down? Does not play like a four seamer doesn't play well down, like with that kind of
profile. Ooh. And you talked about George Kirby. Oh, I'll get to him in a second, but don't let me forget this whole thing with George Kirby. You have no idea. But I think the reason is twofold. When I was growing up and throwing heaters, it was exactly what they're doing, which is like shoot knees down and away. It's the hardest thing to do as a hitter. And that's a skill that you get. That's the skill that you have. And you throw in Yuri into the majors, like he's going to do the thing he's done forever, that he's able to throw strikes with. And it was a 73% strike rate. He was able to do that and make him comfortable in the bigs. And I understand it. Now, he's what, 20 years old? You're saying 21? Of course, I get it. That's just what he's been instructed to do all these years. And that's just his skill. I can grasp that at some point. There has to be a conversation of like, okay, fine, we'll talk about it later. Now is later. Now is the time you have to go upstairs with this, please, because you do not want this to be crushed half the time that they make contact off of you. And he has a 10% swing strike rate on that four seamer. A lot of people are like, well, it's not a very good four seamer then. It is.
Yeah.
It's just not being applied. So I'm really excited about Yuri. It's just the only question is, again, I don't know if I can put him in top five in a dynasty because I don't know if that's going to happen now. That's the only worry I have.
So let me ask you, Nick. All right, we've been talking about top fives. Who would be your top five?
I don't know. I would probably have Pablo Lopez in there. Pablo Lopez's whole arsenal is just incredible. It's I'm not saying it's just because I got to talk to him. I was just the entire season, you can see just he's doing all the right things. He has above average command. He has a four-seamer that misses as many bats as pretty much as anyone. Top five four-seamer in the swing strike rate. Really good command. Throws sinkers inside. Throws sweepers away now. There was the missing piece. And of course, he has like one of the best changeups in the game. Like, good situation in Minnesota. He's top five for me. I don't see this stopping next year or something like that. Like, he's got it now. And also, I will say, it's really nice that he has the contract extension. Like, he doesn't need to think anything else except just pitch and do the right thing. And he has a notebook. He takes notebooks of every game. It's the coolest thing. Pablo Lopez is in there. We already talked about the top three. So Pablo Lopez is in there. And Cole Reagan's just kidding.
Do it.
I probably would put either Luis Castillo or George Kirby in there. And I would be putting Bobby Miller, I think, over Yuri, Anna, and Grayson personally. Just because what Bobby did last year to me is already the safe floor and can go six innings constantly. That's how I see that. But George Kirby to me is such a talent when it comes to command and like being like the art of pitching. And it's just about little tweaks and adjustments that he needs to make. And even this past year, the slider was much better. And this was, I remember this time last year talking about George Kirby's first season and seeing the slider not really being that great. But then it's exactly like I'm looking at with Bobby Miller, where those sliders were just a little off the plate, too far glove side. And you take them this year and you pulled them back over. And that's actually one of the easier adjustments that you see for growth year to year. Is like if you see a slider that doesn't get enough strikes or is not as good, just look, are they like in the vicinity of down in glove side? Or is it like Tanner Bibee's shotgun blast? And if it's Tanner Bibee's shotgun blast, I'm like, oh God, okay. He doesn't really know where it's going as much. These are little tweaks that you'll get over time to be more precise. And that makes more sense to me. So yeah, I probably, Luis Castillo is also a guy who this past year, he figured out how to use his four seamer better and his slider better. And also the sinker is, in Seattle, they understand how to do sinkers. It's cool. And yeah, he's just killing it in such a good situation as all this track record now of being healthy and going a ton. Like Castillo is your lock for 200 strikeouts every year with good ratios and double digit wins right now. Gausman isn't there because Gausman's just a splitter four seamer guy, and the four seamer gets hit all the time. It's why he always has high whips. We want to say, oh, the BABs are too high. No, his four seamer gets destroyed, but he does that as a sacrifice because the splitter is so good. But he's going to keep getting that.
Yeah,
it's just how it is. I don't think it's going to get better.
How do you feel about Zach Gallen?
Zach Gallen's fine. Zach Gallen, don't get me wrong, I'm a Gallen gal.
Yes.
Was I don't know if I was talking to you guys or I was talking to, it might have been a scout with the Padres, talking about how Gallen's fastball sits low. And he's talking to other players and saying like, they can't tell the difference between his fastball curve and change of his hand. Like they have no idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Gallen has, last year was really interesting where he decided to try and do the Blake Snell blueprint, right? Four seamers upstairs and curves and changeups down, because he actually has really good IVB, but he doesn't really have the best VIA. He doesn't really have anything else going for him. And when those situations, we actually see the guys like, oh man, you have such IVB, you got to go upstairs. But if you don't have the VIA, you don't have the extension, you actually are good doing it low, because then you can steal these called strikes that guys would normally think would land low and actually stays up. And then that sets up your curveball and change it more. So you see guys like Shane Bieber is actually throwing too high. This is actually the thing I've been like, oh my gosh, he has really good IV, but he's getting middle away with his fastball. And by the way, middle away is the worst thing you could possibly do. And it, oh my God, with your four seamer, like same handedness. Every guy that has high ICR on their four seamer, guess what they do? It's middle away with their four seamer. George Kirby, high. Why does he do it? Why is it? He's like the best command guy ever. And he throws it in the wrong spot. And I have to think someone's telling him like, hey, you have this, like we have our heat maps where it's not just a collection of all the baseballs. It's more than average. Are you throwing this in an area more or less than the typical same handedness, this pitch? And George Kirby's is like a giant sun, middle, slightly up away around the edge of the zone. And it's like, no, you should be throwing this middle and up and like slightly above the zone. Because he has one of the highest swing strike rates in the league, but one of the lowest called strikes on his four-seamer, because guys always swing at this because he's always like right there. It's, oh man. Sorry. These are like little things that's just drives me nuts. So Gallen, going back to that, like he tried to do the whole Blake Snell blueprint thing and it didn't work for a bit. And then he came back down doing low and that worked, but he didn't have his curveball for a bit. And it's because always been like this weird thing of, like, all right, is this on? Is it not? The slider, he actually finally split it up of like more of a sweeper slider and then also the cutter this year. So he's solid. And I think honestly, the Arizona Diamondbacks defense is the biggest plus for him. We saw that with Merrill Kelly too. I'm sure Kelly got a new changeup grip, but that defense has really helped those guys a bit. I think helped Fott a lot too. I don't really love Fott, but whatever, the sweeper's good enough. And I guess the fastball's forming better than expected. And there you go. So yeah, Gallen is fine. And in many ways I would say, yeah, Gallen is safer than Yuri Perez and Grayson Rodriguez. That's too much of a home run. I'd rather just like, get someone who I know is going to be an SP1, SP2 for a couple years and not necessarily the best one, but just one that is really safe.
Yeah. And what I've always loved about Zach Gallen, dating back to when he was a prospect coming up, is the fact that obviously he has such a diverse arsenal that he uses to both righties and lefties. That's something I always harp on. It's like, all right, this guy's a four pitch guy. Is he really? If he's only using really two or three of those to each side, he's not really a four pitch guy. That's how I look at it. But Gallen does. He uses all of his pitches to both sides. And even, you know, on days where his curveball might not be there, he can go to other pitches, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, curveball is very beneficial to him, so he's better when that pitch is on. But that's something I've always loved with Gallen. Yeah, he's not quite as flashy as so many other names we'd be talking about in this top 10 range or so. But, man, he's just so consistent. And he showed like that 2022 where he had the ERA over 4, whatever it was. That was the outlier. Every other year, he's been like mid threes or lower.
I think it was like 381 or something. We're like, oh, no, never again or something like that. But it was probably above 4. But yeah, actually, you made a really good point there about something I don't do enough. And I've been trying to do more this offseason. I've actually already talked to our team about making it easier to do on our player pages. And it's really I think starting around like the 5th rotation piece that I did, or maybe something like the 10th, I started actually every single pitcher split up right-handed and left-handed. Mm-hmm. And it's illuminating. It really is about me figuring out too, more so about the arsenal and okay, you got to have a pitch against lefties or righties and such. You'll see so many ICR splits. It's pretty hilarious of like, cool, this guy has all 35% and under against one side, and then the other is like all 40% and higher. I'm like, I wonder which one he has trouble with. It's with Gallen, what's interesting is based on your fastball, you can actually already see if you're going to have success or not on both sides of the plate, because four seamers can work against both. Generally, it's going to be best same-handedness, but a guy like Gallen who does it with called strikes, you can live both sides that way, right? The Gallen method of staying low. Also, if you have really good command with your four-seam, you can go inside to either side and you're just like the best. That's like my favorite thing ever. Few guys do that, but if you can, that's awesome. What it does eliminate is that sinkers are really good only same-handedness. And a guy that is a sinker first and doesn't have a four-seamer, I get scared about, especially if they're a lefty, because what are they doing to get inside to a righty? They got to have a cutter. They got to have a changeup. If they don't have one of those two, then it's just you're not going to be able to do this for the most part.
That's why it was so good for, at least for encouraging for me, when Framber Valdez added that cutter. Because
yes, you're right. And then he stopped doing it against righties. Yeah, he only did it as get nullified to lefties.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing? I don't... It works, and it's fine. But I've come to terms with Framber, and I'm just whatever. You're just going to have a worse sinker against righties and deal with it. The changeup tried to help a bit with him. He didn't get enough strikes in the curveball, and that's why he had the volatility. But at the end of the day, you're still going to get good enough ratios with a winning ball club and a good amount of Ks and everything. And it's like, all right, fine, Framber, just whatever. Right. But yeah, but always have that in mind of, especially with the younger ones, is they're going to be affected more by adversity than a veteran. So if they have an obvious hole, they will go through a tougher time getting out of that hole because it's their first time really going through it. And if they don't, a way to attack left-handers as a right-hander, like it's just a sinker and a slider, then they got to get a cutter, they got to get a changeup, they got to find a four-seamer that they can do. They're like, got to do something here because he can't just do backdoor sliders and sinkers away. This is not a recipe for success. Yep. So those are, if you can identify what the holes are for a lot of these guys, it actually makes it really exciting when you can see, like, wait, hold on, he's added this one thing. Cole Reagan's to lefties, he needed something, and in the minors, he added a slider. And all of a sudden, that was in July. And then all of a sudden, in start of August, he does that against your Red Sox, Eric. And it's like, oh, cool. What is this slider? This is amazing. Yep. And all of a sudden, now he's fixed. So that kind of stuff is really cool. And it's really illuminating, separating it out, lefty. I love that you mentioned that.
Yeah, that's always something that I've been very crucial about in my own analysis. And that's why I've always been a big Gallen guy. I've always been super high on him. But Gallen. Get it right, Eric. Jeez. But one name here I really wanted to pick your brain on, maybe one of the more talked about names on the pitching side of things this offseason due to how he finished 2023. Let's talk some Tarik Skubal here, Nick. Is he, I've seen some that are like, he's elite, no doubt about it. And others like, he's not elite. And I tried to throw, when I saw him like being ranked top 10, I tried to throw cold water on that. So I really dug in, and outside of having not the longest track record of elite production, there's a lot of good in the profile. Is he an elite arm? And is he a guy that could be a top 10, top 15 arm moving forward?
Yeah. So in the beginning of the offseason, this is one of the more annoying things that I do. I like do my rankings on October 10th and I feel so good. I'm like, yeah, I know everything.
It's hard not to. You get that itch right away, don't you?
For me, it's to get it done because that's an article that like lasts for a while. Everyone's asking me for 2024 stuff. So cool. I have my baseline and then I adjust from here, right? And when I did that, again, I didn't really have my enlightenment when it came to really pitch shape yet. I understood like the basics of it, but I hadn't really done research on all this. And I still hold this, that the results generally will give you an understanding of the shape and how it's using and how they're using it and stuff. Because a lot of the things that I'm doing here about like Yuri Perez is it's a great shape, but it had terrible results, and we're just assuming that he's going to fix the approach or something, which is not an assumption we can make. It's just a hope, and it's clarity as to what the next step would be, right? So with Tarik Skubal, the results on his four-seamer, it was just like the best pitch in the game in the second half. 70%+ strike rate, which is crazy. One of the best O-swing, swing strike rates, just everything about it. And looking at Tarik Skubal's full repertoire, it might surprise y'all to know that he has an elite changeup. That changeup showed up. And hey, if you're a lefty with a changeup, that's the same thing as a righty with a slider, because you're taking down right-handers effectively, okay? So it's an elite changeup, great pitch. That's cool. How good is that four-seamer in actuality? He faced a really easy, cushy schedule. And okay, let's go over everything about the fantastic four elements of, you get it? Because it's a fan, he's whiffing. Okay. Of pitch shape, all right? It's velocity, obviously. It's extension, it's IVB, and it's VAA. And guess what? Extension, VAA, and IVB are all bad, or the average or worse on that four-seamer. And so his locations have been good, and he did add 2 ticks of velocity after TJ. So, I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel right. It feels so much more like a flash in the pan, more so than Reagan's does, because Reagan's has a full 5-pitch arsenal, and trust me, I watch more Reagan's than anyone else, and I will be the first to tell you that guy was locked in and deserved all of this. And it's why I told you during the Cardinals game, even though he had that bad game against them, everyone wanted to go get Silseth. I was like, I don't care. This is the skills that matter most here. With Skubal, you're like, well, he has a slider too, doesn't he? He does. It's really like a bad cutter. and that's not good. That's not going to be a swing strike rate pitch for him.
No.
And that's it. And like the curveball we thought would be, but it's I think someone else quoted this. I think it might have been Eric Loggenhagen, who called a curveball a Giolito curveball, where it's too big for its own good. And it's either like really obvious out of the hand, or it's just too unwieldy. And I feel like that's the way with Skubal's. So it's a fastball changeup where I don't think the fastball is actually truly elite. And I'm scared by that. So I want to have Skubal on my teams, but I'm probably going to have him at 25 or something in my rankings, 25 to 30. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm probably going to have Framber Valdez ahead of him. And I'm like, what is life? But yeah.
Would you feel more comfortable investing in a Cole Reagans than a Tarik Skubal right now?
Yeah. And I keep seeing that. I think I saw someone quote, it might have been some Reddit thread or something about Reagans. Anytime someone says anything about Reagans, I got to know about it. No.
Your spidey senses go off.
Yeah, it's just like, where is it? Obvious case of being injury prone than anyone. And I just don't buy this. Their argument was the velocity increase and that he had 2 Tommy Johns. And first and foremost, 2 Tommy Johns is incorrect. It's 1.5. It was the same Tommy John that was just bad the first time. Like, it's not like he kept throwing it, he just has a busted elbow. It was like, no, they did a bad surgery and they redid it. There's a big difference in my mind. Someone said they drilled twice, and that was the argument. I was like, okay, I get that. It's not good, but it's not the same as having Tommy John twice.
Exactly.
That's all I'm getting at. Now, the part about the velocity jump, I can actually understand. There is something to be said about such a huge shift. I'm not going to think like Cole Reagans is all of a sudden so much more injury prone because of that. And when it comes to a polished skill set, it's crazy good. The biggest issue really is the Royals. That defense let him down, even though it was rated highly overall. Like, they let him down in games. The managers let him in too long and did not know how to manage him. And their development is terrible, and it's totally dependent on Tread Athletics to help, which is weird and not really something I like. And also wins. And what is he going to know? Oh boy, they're going to win some games and he's going to go 6 innings often. But yeah, I believe more in the ability of Cole Reagans to take that 9-10% walk rate that he had and keep nibbling, but nibble just a little bit better and take a step forward from where he was. It's more believable to me than just this elite changeup with a fastball that doesn't have a good shape. And maybe the velocity comes down for Tarik Skubal. It was 96 last year, and that adrenaline and 80 innings, like, super fresh. That probably will come down to 95. And is that going to be as effective? Probably not.
I'm so glad we had you on there. You're really making
Not before, just now.
No, always happy to have you on, Nick, of course, but you're really making me rethink some of my own rankings, which I think is good to do, is bringing on a guy like you, that this is what you do day in, day out. and really makes me think, all right, maybe I have this guy a little too high. Like, you're making me rethink Pablo Lopez, Tarik Skubal. So after we finish recording, I'm gonna start digging, maybe nitpicking
Pablo
my own
all day. Oh, you're never wrong adding Pablo to your team. You're just never wrong.
And he was one where when I first saw the ADP, after ADP had settled for this year, we had more than a few drafts back in October. I was like, man, ADP is going to be top 10 SP on Pablo Lopez this year, huh? And I was like,
I'm at six, I think, in October.
It didn't look right. Like the eye test, the initial eye test, seeing him there, it wasn't working with me. But then dig deeper, and I'm like, man, there's a lot. And you obviously went over it. There's a lot of good in the profile too. So he's the one where I had him 15. I'm going to be moving him up here. Yeah. I'm glad that we've had you on this episode. So I'm really, questioning my own rankings.
There's one extra element too. It's he's so smart and does all the right things. And I highly recommend anyone who hasn't watched it yet. It's on YouTube. I went over a game with him. I was lucky enough to sit down and talk to him about everything. And then literally all six innings, he talked about each pitch with me, about what's going through his head, what he's trying to do. Mm. It's amazing. It's incredibly fascinating. So much insight he gave. It's long, but is there anything else you want to do? No. Go watch that. It's on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/pitcherlist.
Absolutely. I love those that you gave us a tie on.
The fact that these guys are up for it blows my mind.
I know. That's just, it's really cool when you see these guys are just down to earth and just willing to just talk baseball. And then go over their thought process and how they're attacking hitters and stuff like that. It's really cool to get like that behind the scenes look into their mind during a start. So yeah, definitely recommend all those that you do. Let's keep going with let's finish out our top 25 rankings here, Chris. So I think we each hit our top 10. So off our 11 through 25, even though we could 11 through 15 already. But as of now, I guess this is going to change a little bit. But I had Glasnow 11, Skubal 12. Which I'm already questioning.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why Skubal? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm already questioning that. I was a little lower on Skubal than I talked myself into him this offseason. Mm. Now you're making me talk myself back.
The results of the four-seamer are very convincing. It's like a battle of me. Okay, cool. I'm leaning into pitch shape now. But like those results were so good. It's really tough.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, Yamamoto 13, Lopez 14, who will be moving up, Miller 15, and then probably the hardest pitcher for me to rank right now. Me and Chris are way off on our ranks here, but I don't know where to rank him. I got Shane McClanahan 16. I don't know right now. Obviously, top five arm, but he's hurt. I don't know. I have Senga 17, Peralta 18, Nolan 19, Blake Snell 20, which I don't feel good about. Kevin Williams 21, Max Fried 22, Framber 23, Logan Gilbert 24, and Jesus Lizardo 25. Chris, what's your 11th?
Yeah.
What's yours, Chris?
All right. I've got Freddy Peralta at 11. I'm just really enamored by what he did last year. Finished really strong. I'm banking on a bounce back there. Gausman at 12, Glasnow at 13, Pablo Lopez at 14, Bobby Miller at 15, Logan Webb at 16, Kodai Senga at 17, Blake Snell at 18, Aaron Nola 19, Tarik Skubal 20, Max Fried 21, Gavin Williams 22, Logan Gilbert 23, Framber Valdez 24, and also Jesus Lizardo at 25.
Wow. You guys are really close on a lot of these guys that I'm terrified to draft this year. Being really unfair because I don't have a list, guys, in front of me for the pitch list guys doesn't have his top 100. I don't actually have my top 100 made yet. And it's really annoying me. I should have it done by now, but I want to really go through all the rotations first. And I have like four rotations left. And it's just been more of a busy offseason than I expected, but it's really fun to be like, cool, I've got the best written reports on every guy that I've ever done. Okay, hold on. First and foremost, I love the fact that I didn't hear Tyner Bibee once, and I heard Gavin Williams though.
Oh yeah.
So I want to hear both of you, why not Tyner Bibee in the top 25 and why Gavin Williams in the top 25.
I have Bibee pretty close. I'm at 28. Okay. I like Bibee. I've just always been so fascinated with him as a prospect before he became like a popular prospect. And so I've always just like had a thing for him. I think that he's that boring type of arm. Like he's not super flashy, not going to miss a ton of bats, but I do think that he has the stuff. Like it's decent enough stuff to be a solid arm. I think he's one of those more of a floor type arms that you want. And I do believe that he can, throw consistent innings year over year. So sure. I do like Bibee. I'm just outside the top 25, but Gavin, I just think has another level. Obviously, with the big fastball, like the arsenal in general is just much more polished. And while I think that there still some question marks surrounding like the command and stuff, I do believe that will be okay long term, because he misses so many bats, like he can get away with a little bit of a higher walk rate. So I'm not as concerned about him from that standpoint. So I just like the arsenal a little better for Williams, and Bybee, just he's fine. I just think he's a less flashy type arm.
Eric?
Yeah, no, I think Williams has some of the, in terms of, he's not pitching prospect anymore. Last year when he was, like, this guy has some of the better stuff out of any pitching prospect last year, and loved the fastball. You got the secondaries that he can miss bats with. And yeah, Bybee's fine. I'm not quite as high on Bybee as Chris, but I think Bybee's a solid arm. I think he's a guy that maybe just settles in as like a top 50-ish pitcher, somewhere in that range this year in, year out. Maybe a bit higher. Maybe that's a little low. Maybe a bit higher than that. But like Chris mentioned, I think Williams has that next level. He has that next level of upside to unlock that I just don't see Bybee getting to. And maybe I'll be wrong with that, but we've seen guys, we didn't think Bieber was going to be as good as he was. Obviously, he's kind of fallen off the last couple of years, but nobody saw Bieber getting to the levels.
Yeah, we didn't expect him to have such good secondaries. We do not really expect that, nor do we expect the four-seamer to get by as much as it did.
Exactly. Cleveland has a funny way of maximizing guys that we don't think they'll maximize, but so maybe Bybee, they can find that next level with him. We'll see. But yeah, Williams, as I've always been enamored by him. I want to see him get a bit more ground balls. You know, he gives it too many balls in the air, but that's something I think can be tweaked. But I love the stuff. And I think if you keep that walk rate in check, which it's never been terrible, but not a huge command guy. That was the thing where he was always like fringe average command and control. Walk rate was about 10.5% last year. That can tick down a little bit. I think the K rate could tick up from that 23.5% mark we saw. I think he could be like a 27-28% K rate guy with the stuff he has. Good swinging strike rate overall. So yeah, I like Williams a good bit, but I have Bybee in like my top 40 overall.
So very quick question before I go into Bybee and Williams. You're mentioning that you want to see more ground balls and you don't fly balls. And I want to understand that a little bit better.
With Gavin Williams?
Just in general. For example, if we're saying, hey, I really love four seamers with a good IVB, that means we're going to see more fly balls from them, because that means they're trying to miss above the bat, right? And I'm someone who says, look, my favorite characteristic of a pitcher is having a four-seamer with good VA and IVB, which means that they should be throwing it upstairs, which means they should get a lot of fly balls. Shota Imanaga wasn't touched by the Yankees because he said, we love too many fly balls, because he has the best VAA and the best IVB. And by the way, I might even have Shota above Bybee and Gavin Williams, but that's just me because of how elite this four-seamer is that he has. And the problem that he allowed home runs, guess what? He wasn't throwing it up in Japan. He was throwing it around the edge because he's not really a home run problem in Japan. So he didn't really need to miss like that. And they're going to go more in contact, which means he wants to hit around the edges, pitch more to contact than he is actually trying to overwhelm guys like he can in here. So I hear fly ball and I hear either two things. One, elite four-seamer upstairs, or poor secondaries that they float, that they don't actually get down enough. And those sometimes is a change of focus that's just too high up and they get underneath and they golf that up. So innately, I hear fly balls. I'm like, I don't know, that's kind of sure. So they made a career out of being an extreme fly ball guy. Verlander as well.
Like, yeah, it can work for sure.
So the best thing is elite ground ball rate and elite whiff rate. And that's cool because that means you don't let home runs and you get all the strikeouts. And that's awesome. Right. But innately, one or the other, I'm not as convinced that it's just like they're one or the other. It's just like, all right, what is this stuff doing? And then if they're both equal, like both getting crushed, okay, fine, put it on the ground, please. That'd be cool. Thank you.
Now, do you think Williams will have an elite fastball? Where do you see his fastball?
I don't know. Okay, so this is the funniest thing, actually. Tanner Bybee has this whole thing about stay verti, right? Oh, cool. If I just stay vertical with my four-seamer. But wait, he actually stays vertical a lot. And he has 10% or sub 10% swing strike rate. Why? Because the thing is terrible. It is a bad four seamer. It has one of the worst VAAs. He has no extension. It's just 15 IVB, which is average, if not like slightly like below for the sake of fantasy purposes. This is not a pitch that he should be utilizing a lot as like the basis of his repertoire. And what's really funny to me is if I had to give one comp for Tanner Bybee, it's Carlos Carrasco, because it's an elite changeup, elite slider, and the fastball is going to be the detriment of him. Now, I would say Carrasco has better command when he was doing his thing. I'm watching Bybee, oh my gosh, the anxiety I had and the frustrations. The subconscious internals that I get of watching Bybee and just not having any confidence that he's going to put the next pitch where he wants to. But that slider still worked even when it was over the zone, and same with the changeup in the zone. And that is, it drove me nuts. It worked. And maybe it's one of those things where I'm too big brained here and, oh man, there's no way that goes, that works again, but he had success this way. And what if he gets better command with those two, then like everything's fine, Nick. So that's cool. And that's more than what Williams has. Williams doesn't really have two reliable swing strike rate pitches right now. The curveball had a sub 50% strike rate last year, as he just can't quite wrangle that thing. The slider is good. It's not quite there yet. There are games I definitely saw him feel like, well, I don't have my slider today. Okay. And that can be really rough. And then as you asked, the four-seamer of Gavin Williams, across the board, Gavin's best asset, outside of the velocity is great, is his extension. It is elite extension. Like yep. Zach Wheeler, elite extension. Freddie Peralta, elite extension, right? And when he's doing that at 96, 97, the four-seamer, oh boy, watch out. Like that thing gets on you. So that's pretty cool. He doesn't quite dominate upstairs as much as I thought he would. And the VAA is fine. It's like right at one. IVB is not like 17 or something, like 15 and change. So I'm a little worried that either Gavin Williams, two things can happen, right? He sees exactly the same, which never happens. Either he loses some velocity and some of that extension, or he figures out some way to get more IVB on it, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think if there's anything, it's the former. So I'm a little tepid on Gavin Williams for that reason. He could get better with his curveball and slider like tomorrow or something, and then all of a sudden he's much better. But both of them are weird, and I hate weird. I don't like going after weird. Sure. I like going, sure. Cool, that's a thing. This will be better. That's cool. Great. Awesome. And Shota is, he's a command pitcher, and he has four pitches he commands well, and a nasty sweeper and a nasty splitter and a curveball he can throw for strikes. And like literally pitch shape wise, like one of the best four seamers we've ever seen. So I'm so excited to get like legit StatCast data on that. Just, oh my gosh. And the right. Cubs better make him throw upstairs. So I don't know. That's where my head is at with those guys.
All right.
And I've been seeing everybody favor Bybee over Williams because he just had a better season. So it's cool to see you guys not necessarily be on that train.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right, let's close out the show with this. Now, neither of these two guys were in our top 25, but I want to ask you about them anyway. Teammates on Cincinnati, Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo. Just because you mentioned Hunter Green earlier, I wanted to get these guys in to this episode.
If I had to make a bet at who the best Reds pitcher is in 3 years, it's Connor Phillips.
Really?
Connor Phillips has better fastball, is a better fastball and slider than Hunter Green.
So you're not even a Lodolo guy then?
Lodolo, I probably am more in this year than Hunter Green. Hunter Green is twofold why I don't trust him. One, the worst extension. And that means that the four seamer, we always say it's hittable despite being like 100 or something. It's because of the extension brings it back a lot. And the pitch shape of it is not as amazing as I wanted it to be. He also doesn't have the best command of it. He just doesn't. And actually, I think Zach Dobroff shared with me a lovely chart of Hunter Green. Or maybe it wasn't Dobroff, maybe it was someone else, but that all of his hits came when it wasn't in high location at like the end of 22 or something like that, 2022. And I was like, this is so obvious of like, he throws it lower and oh no, hits happen and then he keeps it up and hits don't happen. It's like, okay, I don't know what he's going to do. And there isn't a third option and it's a terrible situation. Just the whole thing just says, I don't want to touch Hunter Green. Lodolo, at least there is some more promise about breadth of arsenal, like the changeup being good and the slider going down and in the righties too, and the fastball being weird but successful, but a little bit better commanded. But they're too volatile for me. And then I see Connor Phillips, and it's like, oh, cool, you have a better pitch shape than Hunter Green with better extension, and you break the charts on stuff plus with your slider, but his command, I have no idea. That's what I'm saying, in 3 years, hopefully he gets it by then. So I'm probably not drafting those guys. I'm not chasing them. To me, again, it's weird, and you won't be in a place of, like, yeah, this is it. This is good. This is everything I want.
Yeah. Like, so Hunter Green to me is like poor man's Spencer Strider. And that I'm not saying that.
Right.
Sometimes I'll say that as a compliment. It's like, oh, this guy is better than we think. No, I think Green is like the worst of Strider. I mean, similar to obviously four-seam slider, seldom used changeup. But Strider makes it work because his two pitches that he uses are elite. And
the slider is like a 30% swing strike rate pitch,
right?
Which is just what? And the four seamer actually gets hit the same amount as Hunter Green's. It's like a 45% ICR. So it's just
really interesting. Yeah,
the slider too. Because people, when they actually make contact, when they catch up to it,
right?
You know, it's they got it. So
But yeah, Green, like, I'm just wondering, yeah, it's foolish to say that he can't improve, obviously, right? He's still young. But is this what Green's going to be? A guy that's,
yeah, you know, he feels like he'll
get you a ton of Ks, but the ratios are just meh. Not terrible, but like low to mid four ERA guy, whip 1.3, give or take.
Matthew Boyd, right? From 2018.
Yeah. Oh boy, bringing back the boy, the Boyd,
Boyd boys, Boyd, and like the Robbie Ray of old.
Boyd was like your first. Was he your first? No, pitching
don't you crush? Dare! That's when you first started listening. Oh man,
who was your first like Aaron, pitching crush?
I was in on Jake Arrieta before his career year. He was my first. He was truly my first. I was in on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Colin McHugh too. But those are my, and then like Aaron Nola was really like, okay. And then Luis Castillo. Oh man, Luis Castillo. That's why I did a podcast with Spore, the Fireside Chat, is because I was so in on Castillo. And then we were both in on him. And he was terrible in 2018. And Spore was in the car being like, man, this sucks. Like, I'm just going to do a podcast with Nick about it. So we did the Fireside Chat about Luis Castillo being like, I don't know, man. I think he's amazing. I don't think I did anything wrong. He's great. And it was like the weirdest podcast I've ever done because I'm trying to say like I don't have fault, but I don't know. Look at Luis Castillo.
Right. Yeah.
It was so strange.
But yeah, back to the Cincinnati arms real quick. Yeah, I'm definitely a Lodolo guy, and I've been very vocal about that. Obviously, limited the 7 starts last year. He was hurt, but still, the curveball just misses so many bats.
Yeah, it's a really good pitch. It really is.
And I think obviously it was kind of fluky stats this year. It was 286, but you mentioned you don't go against the batting average on 40
batting average balls in play.
Yeah.
I think I got that.
The whiff rate of it on it was great. That's his main go-to. And also mixes in that changeup sinker here and there. Obviously the fastball is not nearly as flashy as Green's. It's 6 miles an hour or something like that, lower in velocity. But I think the fastball, I don't know whose fastball. It's hard to say, but Nick, whose fastball do you like more, like Lodolo's or Green's?
Green's is better.
Okay. Yeah.
Probably.
They're so different.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, being a Frankenstein pitcher, it's going to be Green. But I think with Green, those games when you get like 50-55% sliders is when he's at his best.
Yeah.
It's just he's going to get enough strikes with those on a given day, and then he can save the four seamer upstairs. With Lodolo can just like feast on fastballs and not get as burned, but it's not really this electric pitch that it can be with Green's.
And yeah, going back to the ground ball, fly ball thing, I think it's very important that where they pitch half their games.
Yeah, that's obviously a great point too, yeah.
Obviously, if you're giving up more fly ball in a park, if it's Kauffman, okay, it's different than Great American Ballpark or Coors.
But right.
Lodolo gets more ground balls. That's very encouraging. So, yeah, I lean Lodolo. Chris, what are your thoughts, Lodolo versus Green?
Got him pretty close right now in the rankings. Green slightly ahead, just as I believe in the upside a little bit more. I'd say there aren't concerns, but yeah, I just think that given the fastball velocity, obviously there's issues with the fastball with Green, but he's got at least the velocity going. He's got the slider. There is potential, I think, for Green. He's just got a little bit more upside. Lodolo probably has the higher floor here, so you can take your pick there.
Yeah, very different arms. So I always love comparing those two. Them being teammates certainly helps the matter, but I think that's going to wrap us up. Nick, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom with the world here. Before we get out of here, anything going on? Obviously, there's a lot going on at Pitcher List, but anything in particular you wanted to quickly throw out there that people should be
Well, first and foremost, everyone listening to Toolshed, of course, if you haven't rated and reviewed this podcast, what are you doing? They put so much effort into this, and you really got to go and leave them a lovely review. And I believe you guys have a Patreon as well. So go support that. Please go right now and do that. For us, we just launched PLX, and go check it out. We have all this updated stuff from our amazing PLV apps that we've added. We're actually working on a minor league PLV app as well, so you can get our assessments at the major league level for all these prospects, which is going to be such an exciting thing to roll out this year. But we've updated our player pages, so you can get IVB, you can get VAA, you can get all that stuff on our pages, which is incredible. And just a load of other stuff. We have career data now, finally, instead of just going back to 2018, which is so awesome. And just a lot of other really good fun stuff, of course, coming in. Go check it out. All of my rankings are live there. It's funny, I'm saying this before PitchCon when I don't have them, but they're there now. You'll see how much of a hypocrite I was on this podcast where I just completely flipped everything I said. So go check that out. Top 300 starting pitchers with, of course, all of our rankings with hitters and relievers and prospects as well. So go check it out.
And for those of you out there that have not checked out the player pages on Pitcher List, you absolutely have to. I'll even admit, like myself, a few years ago, obviously Savant was a key tool, and I still use Savant. I'm not gonna lie, I still use it a bit. Fangraphs, obviously, but definitely you got to at least incorporate pitcherless.
Well, it's all StatCast data. That's 100% StatCast data. We're the only one that has that licensed. So if you're wondering, like, well, just use Savant, that's StatCast. No, I literally made that page so that I could do better analysis for myself because I just wanted it to be nicely organized.
Yeah, definitely go more in depth and approach it differently, different metrics. And so yeah, definitely phenomenal resource. Absolutely. And not just for hitters as well. Obviously, people think of pitchers, and obviously it's great for that. All the player pages are phenomenal. All the content over there, all the podcasts. So if you're not checking out Pitcherless, what are you doing with your life? But if you want to win, check out.
It's all my friends. They're like, what's baseball?
But all right, that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. We all hope you enjoyed this episode. This was a lot of fun, and I think a very informative, even for me and Chris, look at our own rankings and make some changes there. But we will be back later on with part two of our Dynasty Pitcher Talk. But until then, everyone take care.